it's Walmart itself that is making this prediction, but other analysts are also making similar predictions. So it's not just sort of Walmart.
There are other analysts who say that by the end of next year, Walmart will surpass Apple. I mean, it was even surprising to hear they were number two. They came out in their investor day 2 weeks ago and said, we're now the second most used. And all of us said, well, wait a minute, really? You know, we remember them launching this, but they were, a year after Apple Pay came out, and they haven't made, talked much about it. But this is very much part and parcel of their broader push into e-commerce. And this is just one element of it.
What is Snap attributing this miss to, if indeed they're commenting specifically on it?
For the revenue miss, the reason that it missed so badly was because the company has been transitioning to an auction-based sales model for its ads. As opposed to selling the space piece by piece, they're making it easy for people to do it in a self-serve manner. So the prices have gone way down. They've gone down 60%. So although Snap has a lot more advertisers that it's catering to now, they're not paying those high prices that they used to pay when this was an experiment for them.
An unusually soft warning to Kim Jong-un from Donald Trump. The U.S. president speaking from South Korea Tuesday side by side with leader Moon Jae-in. That may point to a new, more united front with U.S. ally Seoul. The White House says Trump's Korea visit is meant to ratchet up pressure on the North, but there's at least one line he's not crossing. Trump is steering clear of the world's most militarized border out of fear it could be seen as a provocation.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's November 8th, 2017. 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've got a great broadcast for you today. A little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking about the tax bill that is making its way through Congress. Jeremy Grove will be here. He's a professor of economics at Northern Illinois University. What will happen with the bill? Who's going to be impacted the most? It's all coming up in the second half of the show. In just a minute, we'll bring in our first guest. Nicholas Armstrong will be here. He's a director of research and evaluation at the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University. Veterans Day is coming up. New study says there are some good places to live if you're a veteran. We'll also talk about finding veterans jobs. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Flat numbers on the S&P and NASDAQ this morning. Crude oil at $57.04 a barrel. Around the globe this morning, the Nikkei is off about a tenth. The Hang Seng is down about a third. And the Shanghai is up just a fraction this morning. In Europe, the numbers are generally negative, with the DAX, CAC, and the FTSE all in negative territory. The FTSE just going positive, but sort of a lackluster day in Europe this morning. A couple of big stories that we're watching for you. You heard there in the opening montage, Snap third quarter loss more than triples, and the stock tumbled after hours. Snapchat getting a redesign to make it easier to use, but the new look will not be the latest earnings report from the parent company that is any prettier for investors. Shares were down more than 16% in after-hours trading last night after the company posted another quarter of disappointing growth. Snap reported a loss of $443 million in the third quarter, more than triple the loss last year. American consumers increased their borrowing by $20.8 billion in September. It was the largest gain in 10 months and was led by a sharp increase in borrowing for auto and student loans. Federal Reserve says that September increase followed a gain of $13 billion in August and marks the largest monthly increase since November of 2016. Millions of Americans would lose the ability to deduct up to $2,500 in student loans under the Republican tax bill. Education advocates say the proposal would make college less affordable, but supporters of the measure say they would be offset by other provisions of the deal. And U.S. and Chinese companies have signed business deals to the two sides, say, are valued at $9 billion during a visit by President Trump in a tradition aimed at blunting criticism of China's trade practices. No details yet on the 19 agreements signed today at a ceremony attended by the U.S. Commerce Secretary in Beijing. Veterans Day is coming up. We thought we'd take the opportunity today to talk a little bit about finding veterans jobs, the efforts that are ongoing out there. And there's a new report that has pinpointed some of the best places to live if you're a veteran. Nicholas Armstrong is here this morning. a senior director of research and evaluation at the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University. Nicholas, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Glad to be here. Thanks.
On Veterans Day, I think Friday is the weekday that we celebrate it, but I think it's Saturday, right? And this report that has found some of the best places to live if you're a veteran comes from Wallet Hub.
That's right. Yes, Veterans Day this Saturday.
So tell me about the Wallet Hub report. Where are the best places to live if you're a veteran?
So they ranked the cities across the country based on both how veterans are doing as far as employment, things like the economy, quality of life, and health. And, you know, at the top of the list is Austin, Texas, followed by Colorado Springs, Virginia Beach, and Raleigh and Plano, Texas, rounding out the top five.
How do they find the best places to live? Is there something about a community or something the community is doing that helps veterans more than another city?
Sure. So, you know, Wallet Hub used this method to basically, you know, take a look at different aspects of what makes a community really attractive to a veteran, and, you know, things like how veterans are doing in the job market is obviously a big factor in that, but also in terms of how veterans are thriving in those communities as well. So that's why they look across those different factors.
So let's talk about at the top of the list was Austin, Texas. Give me a sense of what is happening in Austin that singles it out in this area.
Sure. I would expect, you know, the job market in particular there is doing well. Also, if you notice, Plano, Texas, so the state of Texas in general, with the economy there, and also it being a one of the larger states in general, with veterans, as far as the veteran population, also a lot of active military bases in the state itself makes the state and those particular areas attractive to vets.
And we sometimes highlight these lists because there are lessons that other places can learn. Chicago's not in the top 10, no Illinois city in the top 10. So I'm guessing we could learn, other places can learn from these cities.
Of course. And part of it's the economy itself. But also veterans, looking at veterans and how they transition out of the service. So roughly, close to 200,000 transition out of the military each year. Some retire, some go on to either where they resided or to places where they're looking to launch their new career. So, you know, things to make a city or a region attractive to recruit veterans to that area are important. And, you know, we see a lot of national efforts like the Veteran Jobs Mission, for one, a big coalition of Fortune 500 companies looking at sharing best practice, employers sharing best practices to try to bring veterans in, to recruit veterans into their companies as a really important aspect of this. And now we're starting to see that trickle down into local regions. So I know folks in Chicago are actually looking at standing up local Chicagoland area employer coalitions to share best practices in recruiting and hiring veterans into their companies. And so that's a promising sign.
Nicholas, hang on with us. We're going to come back, and I want to talk more about what you do there at the Institute for Veterans and Family, Military Families, and talk more about some of the efforts that you've got going on there and maybe what the job prospects are and whether things are improving.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, stocks traded in a narrow range on Tuesday with the Dow Jones closing higher by about 9 points at 23,557. The NASDAQ composite was off 18.5 at 67.67. The S&P 500 lost half a point. Americans increased their borrowing by $21 billion in September, helped by a sharp rise in auto and student loans. The figure reflects the largest monthly increase since November of last year. Target is one of the few brick-and-mortar retailers successfully fending off the online onslaught, but now it's closing a dozen stores as it slims down its portfolio. The chain has opened 32 new stores this year, and it'll expand locations that are turning a profit while it shutters those 12 after the holidays. President Trump has cause to celebrate. He'll be able to compose longer tweets starting today. Twitter has rolled out its new 280-character expansion to all users in supported languages, including English. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
And welcome back to the program, 523 now. Nicholas Armstrong's with us this morning. He's the Senior Director of Research and Evaluation at the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University. Nicholas, tell us a little bit about what you do there and what the program's about. We may have lost Nicholas here. We'll see if we can't reconnect with him in just a few seconds. We will try to reestablish the IVMF based in Syracuse at Syracuse University. It's the Research Evaluation Institute of Veterans and Military Families. They recently announced a goal to place 30,000 veterans and military spouses in jobs by 2022. The program will try to place graduates and current participants of the program and help ease their transition. The experience includes transitioning service, training, also mentoring. It's a no-cost program that is there. And I'm told Nicholas is back with us again from the Institute. I was asking you, Nicholas, if you could tell us what you do there and what the program's all about.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve. So the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University is not your typical academic institute. We're actually a university-based action tank. Our mission is to advance the post-service lives of veterans, transitioning service members, and their families. We do that by actually delivering programs across the country to the tune of serving more than 25,000 each year. We focus around employment and career preparation, small business and entrepreneurship training, and also helping communities support veterans in their local areas. We also do research and evaluation, and so my team is closely integrated with that. And so we go after and pursue research that helps inform the programming that we deliver on the ground.
Operating in 44 states, 9 countries, 2 U.S. territories, and I believe today is your anniversary, isn't it? Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
We mentioned, too, that the one of the efforts is to 30,000 veterans, place 30,000 veterans and military spouses in jobs by 2022. You've already done that. You've had great success in the last year. That seems like an easy goal, but is it?
No, it's not, actually. About 200,000 service members transition out each year, and then if you take a look at the unemployment rate for veterans is at the lowest it's been in 10 years. So as a whole, that's a good news story. When you dig into that data a little bit, though, you start to see that there are pockets of folks among the transitioning community that may struggle a little bit more, at least initially, in terms of finding that first job. Particularly younger veterans, some women veterans, and some racial and ethnic minorities. And so a lot of focus has been working with employers to help understand the business case to hire veterans, understanding the capabilities and skills that they bring to the workplace, and then also helping transitioning service members get up to speed on specific civilian industries so they hit the ground running, with the right skills and credentials needed for transitioning into the civilian workplace.
How much focus is on leading veterans into entrepreneurship?
Actually, veterans are over-indexed to entrepreneurship, meaning that veterans are more likely to pursue small business opportunities or entrepreneurship opportunities than their civilian counterparts. And this has been a trend that dates back to World War II even. There's a clear interest there. And, part of that we think is related to military training. So things like leadership and the discipline and a little bit of, willingness to take risks and get the job done. Those types of attributes that military service helps instill in individuals helps drive folks toward, starting up a small business or pursuing a business venture.
Well, Nicholas, good of you to be with us this morning, and we're going to direct folks to your website, which is ivmf.syracuse.edu. More information on your programs there, and folks can also make a gift if they'd like. We appreciate you getting up with us and being on the program this morning.
Happy to be here, Steve. Thanks again.
All right. Nicholas Armstrong, Senior Director of Research and Evaluation at the Institute for Veterans and Military Families at Syracuse University. As I mentioned, this is not just a Syracuse thing. It's happening all over the country, and they have their tentacles all over the world, really. The website, again, ivmf.syracuse.edu, and you can also follow them on Twitter at ivmfsyracuseu.
Hi, this is Katherine Davis with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Poppyloo, a Chicago-based beverage startup that's created a healthier lemonade drink, has big plans to expand throughout the Midwest. Poppyloo comes in three flavors, has only 14 grams of sugar, and includes aronia berries, locally grown superfruits. The beverage can be found in Jewel Osco and is expected to be available in Mariano's by spring 2018. Poppyloo is on track to sell 20,000 bottles by the end of this year. Autonomous car company Waymo is testing its driverless vehicle, the Chrysler Pacifica, with no driver in the car ready to take over in the event of an emergency. The testing is taking place in a region near Phoenix, Arizona. Meanwhile, Chicago still has no plans to test driverless car technology in Illinois. And Exacure, a Northwestern biotech spin-out that's developing gene-regulating therapies for inflammation, has raised $31.5 million over the last 2 months, according to a Crain's article. Investors include Chinese drug maker Luye Pharma Group. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. The House Ways and Means Committee has blocked Democratic efforts to provide bigger tax benefits for parents. Costs of raising children and adopting kids. The panel voted 23-16 along party lines to reject Democratic amendments that would have made changes to the Republican tax plan. The goal is to still have this thing done by Thanksgiving, but is that possible? We bring in this morning Jeremy Groves, who's a professor of economics at Northern Illinois University, associate professor there at NIU. Jeremy, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So I guess the big question is it even within the realm of possibility to have this thing done by Thanksgiving?
I would say no. There's a lot of stuff going on in this bill, and there's a lot of people coming out against a lot of these things in the bill. And I think trying to get everything balanced to where they keep the votes is definitely going to be hard to do before Thanksgiving.
One of the, now that we've been able to tear some of this apart and get into the nitty gritty of it, we're seeing a couple of things that haven't held up over time. One of the things is that, Republicans have said, and even some of Trump's cabinets, that this would not lower taxes for the rich. But that seems to be what's happening. And there's even, as people dig into this, a tax cut for lower middle class folks, a tax hike.
There really can be. I was sitting here running just some basic numbers on here, and one of the things that it's doing is it's really blocking off that itemization by doubling the standard deduction, which sounds great at the offset. But what that does is it really kind of blocks out itemization as an option for people. And then where families, especially in the middle class, I think are really losing is they're also getting rid of the personal exemptions. And if you're looking at a family of four, you're looking at almost $16,000 that you get to deduct from your taxable income. That's going away in that case. The smaller brackets help a little bit, but it's really not enough to make up for that huge loss of that personal exemption.
I know the Tax Policy Center is revamping some of its analysis, but says that the numbers that it, at least the numbers in some areas that it has crunched are true. One of them is that the plan would raise taxes for 28% of the population by 2027. So if you're not going to see a hike right away, it'll happen over time. That seems to be like, that seems to be trouble, right?
Well, it is a lot of trouble, and I think it's a really kind of bad example of kind of a bait and switch. One of the things they're trying to do to make up for this this loss of the personal exemption, for example, is they're doing a $300 taxpayer and non-child tax credit, but that expires after 5 years. They've got a lot of other provisions inside of this bill where they're killing these things off after 5 years. And, of course, they have to do that because they've set this $1.5 trillion cap on how much this can add to the deficit.
Yeah, and one of the other big promises was that this would be reform as much as it is tax cuts. And this bill still includes the carried interest loophole. Some other loopholes are still there as well, aren't there?
They've added a lot of they've tried to get rid of a lot of loopholes, especially on the personal income tax side. There doesn't seem to be as much work on the corporate tax side of getting rid of loopholes. So they are trying to do some reform, but it seems to me like they're just trying to do too much with too little time in a case like this.
And so what would you see happening over the next couple of weeks? It seems every day, too, Jeremy, that we've seen that changes, big changes in the bill have happened since this thing was unveiled on Thursday. Is that going to be the way this markup moves along, that every day there's going to be some sort of change to the bill?
I think you can expect that. I think you can expect a lot of changes to this bill as we move forward, as more groups kind of get a hold of looking at the inner workings of this bill and seeing what's there and what's not there. And then the other thing, the other kind of monkey wrench to throw into this process is you have the Senate working on their own version of the bill, which may or may not line up very much with this House version. And so when the Senate releases their version, I think that's supposed to happen tomorrow maybe, you're going to see even more pushes to change and markups through this process. It's going to be a messy process.
Yeah, and some even say it might even be more messy, or probably will be even more messier than the effort to repeal and replace Obamacare. The Senate issues another ball of wax. There were two or three senators already that say they can't vote for this thing as it sits now. Let's talk about the deficit. This will add what, $1.5 trillion to the deficit?
Yes. Well, that's what they've supposedly capped themselves at. As yes, it would add over the next 10 years. It would add $1.5 trillion to the deficit. Which, you know, you're looking at a deficit that's, pretty sizable now. I think the estimate that the CBO has for 10 years out, the debt, which is probably where this deficit's going to add on to, will already be at $30 trillion in 2027. And so we're adding another $1.5 trillion to that.
We hear the argument almost daily from the folks who are pushing this bill that all of this will generate the economy, will even put a bigger spark in the economy, and that some of the growth will pay for some of this. How dangerous is it to go down that road?
You know, that's a big danger. What you have to realize is the U.S. economy is a pretty mature economy, and so we're not going to be seeing a lot of 5% growth. You know, people seem to point to China and say, look, they've got 5, 6, 7% growth. Well, China's still moving from agricultural to production. And when we did the same thing, we had large growth rates. We're not going to see 4 or 5% growth rates because we're a mature economy. The other thing that you have to look at is, I know a lot of the people pushing this bill are pointing towards the corporate tax cut as being what's going to fuel this economic growth. A lot of the research that's out there shows that that's actually not the case. When you cut corporate taxes, at least at the state levels, there's really no evidence that you see large booms in employment or wage growth, and that's really what's going to grow this economy.
Another concern, too, is that we're on really the end, one would assume, of the expansion of our economy that we've seen since 2008. Those things, these expansions don't go on forever, and isn't the danger more likely that we're going to stop expanding soon?
Yes, it is. And that's one thing that a lot of these policy institutes have kind of pointed towards as a concern, is whenever you do tax cuts, that is a stimulating move. And the economy is already moving. We're already at what a lot of you as full employment. And so if we're already at full employment, adding more expansion to the economy is just going to end up overheating the economy, which is going to result in the impending crash that's going to come, because, you know, there's a natural cycle to these things. It just makes it that much worse.
Jeremy, last night after the election in Virginia and in New Jersey, I saw a couple of pundits saying that, hey, with the unpopularity of this tax bill already and the results yesterday in the election, the Republicans might want to rethink some of the provisions of this tax bill. How much does the political and public input on this determine what happens with this tax bill going forward?
Well, I think that's, at least for me, one of the scary things moving forward is there does seem to be a lot of pressure on the Republican Party, especially after their failure to do anything with Obamacare, to do something. And especially when you look at that deficit number, you know, are they going to end up taking this bill and moving it from a tax reform bill to just a plain old tax cut bill? And, you know, let's blow past the $1.5 trillion cap. Let's just cut taxes. Let's just do something so that people say we did something. And I'm afraid that what we're going to end up with is an even worse bill just to get something past the finish line.
Yeah, I'd be afraid if I were one of the sponsors of the bill or somebody who voted for that bill, given that next year is the midterm election cycle. That could be prove pretty dangerous.
You know, it could be, but then you also have the issues with, you know, how districts are drawn. And, you know, I think a lot of Republican voters just really want to see something done. Republicans have both the House, the Senate, and the White House, and they want to see something done.
All right, Jeremy, good of you to be with us this morning. Good conversation.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a great joy.
All right, come back. Jeremy Groves, associate professor, director of graduate studies over at Northern Illinois University, professor of economics, with us on the tax plan this morning, the Republican tax plan, still in the House Ways and Means Committee.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures off 17 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat to negative this morning. Gold and silver both trading higher. Let's get the latest now in agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Tomorrow we get the November crop report, and so grain traders are keeping an eye on that because many traders are looking for higher corn yields, lower soybean yields, and still ample global supplies of grains and oilseeds. Corn prices eased yesterday along with sinking wheat as pressure from the advancing U.S. harvest and large expected yields are weighing on the market. The livestock trade, well, there was pressure there too yesterday. At the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, live cattle settled lower, pressured by sell stops. Funds involved in the CME livestock futures that track the Standard & Poor's Goldman Sachs Community Index also were involved. December live cattle down 70 cents a hundredweight for the day, ending at 124.62, and the February cattle contract ended down 27 cents at $130.75 a hundredweight. Pressure on the hog futures market yesterday from sell stops, downward trending cash prices, and fund liquidation took December hogs down 70 cents, and December closed at $63.92 a hundredweight. The February contract down $1.35 at $70.87. Later today, it's off to Kansas City. The National Association of Farm Broadcasting, that's all of us who do what I do, come together for our annual get-together in Kansas City. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, November 8th. Not much in the way of economic reports today. We will see, however, Forbes release its annual 40 Richest Under 40 list. Bankrate.com is out with a new survey today on the best cities to retire in. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Boston, L.A., Denver are at the top of that list. We will follow that story throughout the morning, maybe give you some more insight on what makes those cities the best. President Trump is concluding his visit to South Korea. Country Music Association Awards happen. Major League Baseball Gold Glove Award winners are announced. And today is the first anniversary of the presidential election that put Donald Trump in the White House. Some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, November 8th, 2017.